Yeah, I like that pack behavior you're talking about. In fact, one of the most recent research things about who you should associate with if you want to be successful in your weight loss, who's important, it wasn't your family, your mother, your children, it was your friends. If your friends were in it with you, that was much higher success. And think about it. Think about OA. These are people we choose. This is a family we choose. Yeah, what else? Any? Okay, let me go on with this because I want to make sure we get our exercise in before lunch, and not physical exercise, but another kind. So those of you who've been with me for many years are going to be very bored by this particular lecture, but you've heard it a million times already, but it's just real important, and it relates to Margie's thing about physical addiction and psychological obsession, okay? So this is something that we knew in the early days of alcoholism, that this was about a 20-year progression of how a person became an alcoholic, the physical part. So I want you to relate, just as the gentleman was saying, liquid sugar versus solid sugar, it's the same thing most of the time. However, I think things change for us in later recovery. It has for me. Scary to mention. Okay, so let's just say we're talking now about physical changes, how we are physically affected by the substance. And it was another gentleman here before he left was talking about that charge that we get when we eat something that a lot of other people don't. You know, they'll say, oh, that's really good, or that's tasty, or even my husband says, oh, God, I'm stuffed. I hate when he says that. Ugh. I keep asking him, could you please not say that? You know, because he's such a normie, and he's such a amateur, you know? Anyway, so this is tabula rasa, newborn babe. This is how we're born. This is assuming we're not born to a drug-addicted or alcoholic mother. If we're born to that, then we have FAS, fetal alcohol syndrome. We get born in withdrawals, and we're already below the line. But most of us are born au naturel, okay, devoid of substance. Then we learn at some point to take in some of this substance. In our case, sugar. In the alcoholic's case, alcohol. And that gets us a little above the line. This is important. This is how it's different for us than normal people. Talked about mood swings before, didn't I? Normal people are going to tell you, I like the taste. I love chocolate. Whatever they're going to say, it's still not the same as what it does for us. If you can buy that, please, that was so healing for me to really understand that I have an allergy to this substance. So let's go. So what happens, we get this plus effect. However, there's no free lunch. I just got to tell the story what happened for me yesterday. It's not that important, but it's just interesting to me. So I had this stuff you squeeze out of a tube for eyebrows. And then you do a brush, you do your eyebrows. And I had it like a month, and it's all dried out. So I took it to Ulta. I said, you know, I had this, and it's dried out in a month. Could I exchange it? She says, oh, sure. And they go, you know, I get the other one, I bring it up. And they go into the system. They got my name and my phone number there. And she says, oh, this is only crediting you with $247. The item costs $6. The computer wants to credit you $247. And I realized I bought it at the clearance rack, right? So I bought an already old thing. That's why it was on clearance. See? But I thought I was getting away with something. See? So I bought it, and a month later, so I said, okay, fine, I'll pay the difference. And, you know, I mean, because that's fair is fair, right? But it was such an interesting thing to think about. You know, whenever we get into that, it's not fair, it's not doing it, the world's not treating me right, you just got to ratchet it back a few octaves and think on the whole picture. And more than likely, the law of karma is working. What goes around comes around. And I'm not going to get away with buying a $6 thing for $2. Ain't going to happen. Sometimes it happens. But, and that's another thing with our addiction. Sometimes it works for us. So then we think, let me roll the dice again. You see? In fact, I was once going to write a pamphlet about addictions being, gambling being the worst, because it is. We're always gambling that we'll get back to that first time and that we'll also get away with something. All right, so back to our discussion. So we get a little above the line, but as I said, there's no free lunch. There's no $2 eyebrow thing. We have to pay the price. We fall a little below the line. This is called withdrawals. Withdrawals, we fall below the line. Now, most addicts, alcoholics, and overeaters, in the early stages of our addiction, we have a very high tolerance. We can eat and drink everybody else under the table. Thank you very much. We're with people like Henry who says, I'm stuffed. Stupid. Then we go back up. What do we do to take care of the withdrawals? What do? Eat more, exactly. So we got to take care of that, so we eat a little more, and it works even better. It takes us up even higher. Okay? That's not a problem. Unfortunately, we go a little more below the line. What's the solution? Eat more, back above, going higher, constant, more quantity. What?
Go on a diet.
Yes, now a diet will sometimes get you back to tabula rasa for a long time. This is the people who swear off, right?
Yes.
And that'll get you back to zero for a long time. Unfortunately, let me talk to you later about tolerance change. Hello, here we're going to talk. We're going to talk, my friends. Okay, so this cycle goes on and on and on and on and on and on. Now, something drastic happens. We cross a line where we have tolerance change. So we've been going fine here for a long time. Then all of a sudden, we take in the same mass quantities we were using before, but it doesn't quite do it like it used to. Our best friend has turned on us. Our tolerance has changed. But the price is going up. Now we have greater withdrawals without the same wonderfulness we had from our best friend in the past. Not good, right? Hopefully, this brings many of us into treatment. We'll see. By the way, this is in the middle of the 20-year thing, all right? This is when the tolerance is changing. It's no longer working. We're having all the ill effects. In our case, weight gain, alcoholics, DUIs, whatever they're having. This is that stage where we operate with, thanks everyone, I'll take care of it. Okay? In the old days, people used to start drinking around 16 or 17 years old. So they were hitting this stage at around 37, 38 years old. But the average age coming into treatment was 51. Because nobody was convinced that they couldn't handle it themselves. So they went on for the next 20 or 30 years handling it until they were somewhere else over here, which is, I can't even get back up to baseline. I can't even feel normal, but I am on Skid Row. We created treatment programs to raise the bottom, to try to give people this education here so they didn't have to go all the way out here. The Chinese say, first the man takes the drink, here the drink takes the drink, and here the drink takes the man. So, most of us who have diabetes have created it by our lifestyle of continuous running through this roller coaster. What have I left out of this? You've heard this so many times. What did I leave out? I don't remember. Anyway, I think that's about it. That's about it. So, this is quite helpful. And if you can keep this in mind, then you realize usually in withdrawals from sugar, the fourth through the sixth day is the worst. That's why most of us give up our diets on Thursday. Right? We start on Monday, and Thursday, the heebie-jeebies are hitting the wall. And I'm going to go to a wedding on Monday anyway, so let me eat. Right? So you would think now, here's where some of the other issues that we're going to get into more this afternoon come to play. You would think, and by sugars I mean also white flour, refined carbohydrates. Sugar is sugar is sugar is sugar. Honey is sugar. Honey has a higher concentration of this aspect than does cane sugar. Honey is like mainlining sugar. So even though it's got vitamins and it's sold in a health store, if you're dealing with this issue, you don't want to have honey. So, anyone want to say some more here before I go on? A lot of what I'm probably going to say today, you already knew, okay? But anyone want to make a comment about any of this? No. So, here you would think, and this works for me and has worked for me for many years and works for many people in OA, you would think if I'm preaching this, then I would say, and by God, you should never have sugar again. And I'm here to tell you that I'm not saying that. But I am saying if you want to have an easier time in your early recovery, do yourself a favor and try to stay off sugar. For your own benefit, to make it easier for you. Because you have a lot to incorporate in your spiritual development. And you don't want to be constantly... because you can't take in what's really here for you to get from the program. Now, if you go off with, I have 3 years of back-to-back sugar clean abstinence, you're also not going to take in what the program has to give you. Okay? Because what was that big word I used before? Humility. See, I came here, like I said, as a successful therapist in drug addiction with a lot of knowledge. And I said, gee, I don't have a clue if I could do this thing. I didn't have any confidence. I was 222 pounds and I had done my best. And I didn't have any confidence about it's going to work. In fact, years later, I uncovered that I probably thought it wasn't going to work. And And that's why I mostly did what they said. I had a secret pact to kill myself. My idea was, all right, you bitches, I'll do everything you say, and it's not going to work, and I'm out of here. But it worked. What can I tell you? So, let me just write myself a note here about... Okay. So, I am not saying that. This program is not a bit about being sugar-free. And this is where we run into a lot of problems with how we're different from AA, which is what I'll be getting into more later. So, at about the 20-year mark of my recovery, I was pretty knowledgeable and big in the whole field. I was doing OA seminars all around the country. I was on national television many times. I was talking this stuff. I was writing books. I knew it. I knew everything. Some of you were with me during those times. And that's fine. I had a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience. I was doing well, and I still am doing well. But something, I was traveling a lot, I guess. Every once in a while, it came to pass that I would have a piece of bread. Like I told you, my abstinence was gray sheet. There was no bread. In those days, there wasn't even oatmeal on gray sheet. Now you get oatmeal. Not then. I mean, it was so carb-free. It was really restrictive, and I ate that way most of the time. And today in my recovery, I eat that way a lot of the time. But at about the 20-year mark, I started experimenting with having sugar. Not unaided and not left to my own devices, on the phone with my sponsor. So we're going out to dinner tonight. Maybe I'll share a dessert with Henry. Okay, let's see how it goes. Make it a straight line. Right? Let's divide that piece of whatever it is. Okay? And I had my half of whatever. How'd it go? I'm feeling okay. Da-da-da. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that would happen, and 4 days later, and I had to say, Jude, this is the price you paid for that dessert. Deal with it. Live with it. Reality is for people who can't handle drugs. This is the consequence. Proceed. Suffer. Lean into the longing. You can't have more. And then other times I would do that, and I got away with it. Free sailing, no problem. Busy in my life, boom, boom. No problem. So this experimenting, always in recovery with someone I'm reporting to, witnessing my behavior, and at the same time doing all the spiritual work of writing, calling, service, praying, meditating, all of that as well, I started developing a different relationship around the substance. And for about the next 15 years, I thought I was getting away with it, or I said I was getting away with it. The truth is, I did get away with it. I'm telling you, my thinking was wrong. By the way, at that time, I was going around the country doing OA retreats, and an essential ingredient of this program is being honest. So I would say honestly, I'm experimenting with this right now. And people would get mad at me. What are you doing? You're telling alcoholics to drink and blah, blah, blah. And this is where I come to save my life, kids. I am not a tough guy, and I'm not strong, and I'm not here to be a pincushion and get arrows at me. I really want to try to stay honest. And this is what my recovery looks like. So I said to them, look, I said, how about I'll be a scout? I'm an Indian scout. You send me out to see if there's any danger out there. You stay back here. I'm out here. If I come back with arrows in my chest, you know, don't go there. But if I stay healthy and at a moderate, normal weight, perhaps it's possible. Perhaps that's what recovery looks like. Now, as we'll get into more later, now my thinking is not that I got away with it, but that I changed. When I said that lady can't live in this body and vice versa, that on a cellular level, I am a different organism with a different tolerance, with a different biochemistry, and more importantly, a different spiritual intention. I'm not using food to be my medication and to be my mood swings. I'm living a normal life. I'm going to birthday parties. I'm going to weddings. I'm sometimes taking part in what's served and sometimes not. Because I still go to OA after 41 years, I am accountable with my fellow persons about what I'm doing in the plate. I make plans for it. I decide how to operate. I talk about it afterwards. I'm just saying that because I want to hold out the promise for you that you can be a normal person in this world. Yes, we're abnormal and we come in here and have to start working on ourselves. But there is the possibility of change. The big book says we will be in a position of neutrality. We'll neither be drawn toward it nor repulsed from it. I think it's possible, but, you know, another part of me says, you know, I'm going to be struck fat. You know, they're going to get me. So, anyone want to throw anything at me? Yes.
One of the things I hear in the program a lot is that while you're working your program, your disease is in the corner doing push-ups, just letting you kind of let go. So for me, I'm very glad to hear what you're saying because I've been 11 years and I've changed, and my food plan is so different than when I started. And now gluten-free, didn't have problems with it. You do change.
So. Yeah, and what you're talking about is having a flexitarian food plan that becomes modified by what you learn as you're further along in recovery. And in my case, it's on a daily basis. I'm not saying this is for me for all time. There may be times I can't do this, and another day this is okay. And I didn't say I stopped working the program. I'm still doing most of the things, sometimes not as rigorously, but most of the things I did from day one. Now, in terms of what Margie was asking about before, what we saw in alcoholism is in this tolerance change aspect, and of course it's just another aspect of tolerance change, that there would be people who had stopped drinking. I treated one at San Pedro Hospital. He had stopped drinking for, I think it was 27 years. And at his daughter's wedding on Catalina Island, he said, I got to toast the bride. And he picked up a glass of champagne and he drank it. He ended up being helicoptered off the island down to San Pedro Hospital where we were. medevac, and he was in full latter stage withdrawals, as if he had been drinking that whole 27 years. So that's what we do know in alcoholism. So I'm not encouraging anybody to run out there. You know what I mean? I don't know what to say, but I think it's important for different ones of us who've been around a long time and look like success stories, and I believe I am a success story, that we're not in the same rigidity that we needed to be in day one. Why? Because we needed to learn discipline. We needed to learn deferred gratification. And we needed to learn the other spiritual development to make us a person who might be able to eat moderately like a normal person. I was a nine-time loser at Weight Watchers. I went 11 times, but the last two times I never lost a pound. But the idea of eating moderately in those days, to me, I don't care how many points I counted, just didn't make it. Didn't happen for me. I was not capable because of the denial aspect. I had no idea the mass quantities I was eating. Or you might say, well, then I'm going to weigh and measure my food for the rest of my life for the next 40 years. It's another way to deal with that. Yes.
Sense for me because...
Wait, let me come over by you because then you can talk into the mic.
Before I got...
wait. Wait a minute. Okay.
Well, before I got into recovery, I've had such a heavy dependency on my inappropriate attachment, whether it was with drinking or sugar or food, because that was like the whole ball of wax for me. I didn't have the connections. I wasn't getting fed through my connection with people, and there was the loneliness and the self-loathing and everything. And as my recovery progressed and I got to be interdependent with community and using these spiritual principles, and I started to learn what I was truly hungry for, I didn't have to go to the food because I was getting my hunger met through human connection, through having a purpose in life, through knowing what my values are and being able to live them. So that over time, as recovery progresses, then I do have more discernment. I do have a track record now of discipline and delaying gratification, so it makes sense that there doesn't have to be the rigidity.
Yeah.
But there, you want to be alert and accountable and have that ongoing. Yeah.
Thank you. Then that's a good lead-in to where I want to go next in a few minutes. What I realized is this is so that you can be recorded. This is so I can be recorded. There's nothing amplifying, so you don't have to speak into my breasts anymore. So someone else like to say more around this? Well, never mind. I can't bring it over. Oh, thank you. I hope I didn't wreck the whole thing.
So you talked about... you talk it out, you plan it, and sometimes it ends up on the plan and sometimes it doesn't. Can you talk about that decision process and why would some days it doesn't?
So did you hear all that she said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, we do say in OA that failing to plan is planning to fail. And most of the time, in the early days, I had a plan, definitely. Now it's more a generalized plan rather than the specifics of peas and carrots and halibut. It's more what will and won't be inclusive. The decision to, first of all, the whole idea of we make a commitment to somebody sounds to me like we're powerful. What? You can really, like I told you, when I first came in, I said, I don't have a clue if I can do this thing. And I'm very smart. But I really felt like, I don't know. And actually, when you read more in the alcoholism litany about acceptance, that's in the stage of acceptance, you go, I don't have a clue. It's not like I've got a plan. It's like, oh my God, WTF. That's acceptance. So I believe our sponsors are our witness. Our sponsors are our witness to our commitment to ourselves. So that takes away all of this good girl, bad girl stuff, all of the applause we're looking for, all of the praise. By the way, I just want to say something about that. I wrote this great thing down, but I can't find it now. But it says, if a drop of water praises the ocean, it has no idea what the ocean really is, the magnitude of it and all the shores it touches and everything else. But if the ocean gives praise to the drop of water, everybody's elevated. Anyway, that's an important thing to me. I don't know why, but we'll figure it out. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Ask your question.
I feel like there's a two-way mirror really being watched. So what you're saying is that at some point in time, I can eat chocolate like a normal person, that I can just call my sponsor and say...
The answer is from time to time.
This is so different. I've only been in a program for 14 months, but everything that I've learned is just the opposite.
That's why I wanted to ask who's on what level of where you're coming from. And believe me, what did I tell you? After 20 years, I decided. Now, I still don't know if I'm really changed. I feel I am. I see evidence of it. Other people report. But give it 20 years first. You know, You're right on, and you're doing right on, and that's what makes this program work. That's not the only thing, but it's important that we have a discipline, that we are in fear of the substance. Definitely, absolutely right. What I'm proposing is, and I'm again scared to say it, that we may become normal people. We may grow into a changed being. In my case, thus far, it's taking 41 years. I'm not thinking, hey, baby, I'm changed now. Where's the bakery? Ooh, look at, I started salivating. You know, before I got into recovery, I said to my first husband, we were walking past the bakery, and I said, wow. I said, I wish I could go in there like anyone else and have one piece of everything. And he was a stone-cold alcoholic, and he said, everyone else wouldn't want to have one piece of everything. And I said, really? So, I am not saying that I get to go to Dunkin' Donuts after this conference. I'm not saying that I get to, you know, because guess what? That's probably not normal either. But anyway, do you know what I'm saying? I'm not talking about this as a license to kill. Kill yourself. I'm just saying that doing the other spiritual, psychological work, my weight loss has been a byproduct of all of that, but in that, I have changed as a person. And my relationship with my substance has changed.
And you're also not doing it alone.
Exactly. And I'm not doing it alone.
That's right.
Wait, don't forget what you... And what she just pointed out, I'm not doing it alone.
That's right.
I'm still present. I'm still accountable. with other OA people, I'm not just willy-nilly. I still go to my meetings. So, yeah?
The Big Book promises that the work the program will then get freedom. And there's freedom from the substance as well as the old behaviors. It also tells us we have choices. And what you're talking about is I'm free of the obsession that I had years ago, and I can make a choice now as to whether or not I'm going to very tenderly try to see if I'm different bodily and spiritually. And you're taking the program with you.
Yes.
And for you, it's working.
You should have that on the tape. Wait, that's. Say a little more of that again, because that should be there. It's this mic.
Oh,
this one will work. Go ahead, say that again, because
that's. Whoop. Attached to your waist.
Oh,
well.
I'm sorry.
I'll come get close to you.
Go.
What I hear you saying is that you're living the program the way the Big Book talks about it, that if we work the program, we will get freedom from the substance, and that we also have choices as to how we're going to work the program, so that as you've done this longer, you see that you are free of the obsession that you had for the sugar and the baked goods, and you have a choice now whether or not to see whether or not you're bodily as well as spiritually different. And you're taking your sponsor with you and trying it. What I hear you saying is if you try it on Sunday and you're okay, then you want it Monday, and then you want it Tuesday, and then when you want it Wednesday, you're going to have somebody who's going to say to you, Judy, maybe you want to rethink this. And then you'll rely on your program to do it. But they do scare us that that is not an easy thing to do. And then, for me, it's the perfectionism. I hear a lot of perfectionism in the rooms from people who have been in a long time. I weigh and measure every day. I eat exactly the same thing that I have every morning for breakfast. And to me, that's not freedom from the substance. That's just a diet.
Well, yeah, thank you. I think that was very well said. But I do not want to give the impression that it always is great and always works out well. I'm not encouraging that at all. Saying what I'm saying is dangerous. So I'm not recommending it for anybody. It's how I am proceeding. And next year, if I have arrows, you know, you'll talk to me. But just as that person who says after so many years they're still weighing and measuring, that's one picture of what recovery can look like, and there are other pictures and other pictures and other pictures. And mine is just one picture. But I want you to know, you see, because I saw so many people in this program who said, oh, my God, they had sugar in the salad dressing, and I went out and regained 60 pounds before I came back. And I want to say, you are full of S, mister. Shut up. Stop playing dumb. So you had sugar in your salad dressing, so the next day you felt shaky. Deal with it and proceed. Shut up with that talk. That's what makes me crazy. That's encouraging. You know, we say, what's a relapse? You know, we say sliver, slice, slab, slob, right? That's one of the OA things. Just because there was a deviation, jump back on the horse and keep going. And people call me and they say, oh, I want to explain why I did this and what happened and this and that. It doesn't matter. We do it because we're a compulsive overeater with a lifelong chronic illness. Boom, back on the horse. Let's go. That's all we need to know. I only want to talk about the future. I don't want to talk about the past. You don't learn anything by analyzing, why did I eat? Why did I eat? Because you are a compulsive overeater. That's all. I'm sorry, you've had your hand up a while, and then we'll go to you, okay?
I wanted to go back to, you said fear. You know, you said it's fear. And as I see that, you know, if, and again, the Big Book tells us too, that that fear is somewhere we lose our reliance on God. You know, the self-reliance. And so because we do have fellowship, we do have people. But if it's a fear and we walk through the fears, do the work the way it's supposed, the way it tells us to in the big book, we can become fully reliant on our higher power. And that's what's going to make the changes. That's what's going to give us the strength and the courage to have I love the term, the flexitarian, because especially as we age, foods do different things to my body. I've got that same guy at home, you know, but he burns it up like crazy, and I don't. Mine likes to sit around and hang out with me, you know. And, I know it's simple math, calories in, calories out. If I'm taking in more, then I'm burning up, then I got to sit with it somehow. But that the courage to face the fears, because if I'm looking at there and if I'm fearing something, I'm either going to fear that I'm going to go too high or I'm going to drop too low. And if I drop too low, I fear that I'm not going to get back up because I'm going to start acting out in the other ways that I used to act out. So I think fear is a big one for me.
And then there's just two things with that. And then here's where, you know, we don't lose consciousness necessarily when we have a slip. Deal with it, suffer. You know, what is all this? Because I had a slip, I deserve to self-medicate myself. See, I'm trying to discourage that sort of thinking, this idea that I'm powerless to get back. You know, like the person said, you don't take the car back to L.A. to start it over again. You, where you are, you have so many years of good recovery. Use it. Why throw it away because someone gave me the wrong salad dressing? Really, I've seen it countless times and I never saw these people again because they had salad dressing. This is what I'm trying to discourage. But I am also not saying that there's such a thing as healed. I am not saying that I am healed. I'm saying I'm an experiment, a work in progress, and this is what it looks like today. So I'm not encouraging you will be able to handle it. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying have the flexibility to let your program and all that's already been inputted into you by you and your sponsors, to trust and give up the fear.
Like this. I've only been here about a half hour, but boy, I really agree with what you're saying. I'm Leonard, and I've been in the program 27 years, and I'm holding on to a 33-year marriage. I'm keeping 50 pounds off. I haven't changed my waist in 27, 30 years. All those good things. My wife still loves me. However, I mean, if I was to go by perfection, I'm right now only have a year and a half of abstinence, and I should be proud of a year and a half of abstinence, and don't say I only have. Because I have, in 27 years, I've been all over the place. I've had great abstinence. I've been, you know, in relapse. I've been with great sponsor, and then I've been searching. I mean, I've done it all. And it's the old cliche, I can't stay clean on yesterday's shower. Because as soon as I start thinking I've got it made, I'm in trouble because I am a compulsive overeater and I have a strong addiction to sugar. I do happen to like salad dressing. And I have to battle the sugar addiction on a daily basis because it's all over the place, you know, from my friends that say, yeah, come on, have it with me, to, you know, what I run into in the market as soon as I leave the produce section. And it's all around. But I can't use that as an excuse because I know when I have the sweets, I get the momentary high and then a week of depression, or not a week, but the next day. And if I stop the sweet, then the next day feels better. And if I stop the sweets that day, then the next day feels even better. And again, it's a slow process. There's no great cure for what I've got, but there is a daily a daily program that keeps me sane and keeps me from getting into the sugar. And it's my, when I do my OA work and I call my sponsor, and I do my writing, and I talk to people when I'm in trouble, and I don't do that all the time, but when I do that, hey, I'm happy and things are going great and my program's great and my life is getting busy. And that's all I can hope for. And if I don't do that, then I get in a rut and, you know, I'm in trouble. So I wish there was a magic formula. 27 years, I can't say, yeah, I can walk away from the candy store automatically. No, I have to actually lift my feet 1 foot at a time and walk away from the bakery or the candy store. And then thank God, or maybe thank God before. Thank you.
Great. Well, this brings me to where I'd like to go now with an exercise. I realize that a lot of this is controversial and maybe aggravating. I still welcome any sharing anyone wants to do. Oh, okay, good. thank you.
Hi, I'm Devorah, compulsive overeater, and I've been in OA for 15 years and have 13 years of abstinence, and I'm really happy you're talking about flexibility because I got the good guidance very early on to define my abstinence, my food plans differently. So my abstinence has always been not binging, but my food plan has changed countless, countless times. It's had to. I mean, if I would have, I couldn't do anything rigid at the beginning. That's what I was doing before I started in recovery. That's when I was weighing and measuring. That's when I was counting calories. I couldn't have my recovery look like anything like my active eating disorder was. And I know my own sponsor can eat anything. And she's got over 20 years of abstinence. But I know the most common message that I've seen in OA is the more rigid and stay away from this, stay away from that. And I've always kind of shied away from speaking up too much about what I can do because, like, I could never do 3 meals a day. It doesn't work for me. I've never done three. Like, there's maybe a couple of days I've done 3 meals a day, and I didn't do it intentionally. You know, for me, it was really important to learn how to eat when I was hungry and stop when I was full. And I have that today. I know what it feels like to feel full. I know what it feels like to feel hungry. And I used to think I knew those feelings, like I felt them physically, but they were completely wrong. And ironically, I kind of started as one of my favorite slogans in OA is take what you want and leave the rest behind. Because if I didn't hear that, I would have left right away. You know, and that's what's kept me here so long. And so I've tried a lot of different things, you know. Throughout my abstinence, like, I've had sugar, and now I actually don't have the most rigid food plan now because I'm on a medical diet for the last 2 years, and so I can't have any sugar or grains or starches or, you know. But the only reason I can follow that, that diet, which was a choice between that diet or medication, is because I have the support of OA and because I work the steps. And I know for me, if I'm ever thinking about food or food thoughts creep up, that means that my spiritual program and my emotional, you know, how much I'm taking care of myself emotionally has been sliding for months. You know, the food, it's not all of a sudden that, like, food looks good. It's because I haven't been communicating with fellows. I haven't been doing as much step work. You know, it's never a surprise when that stuff comes up. And it's interesting to see. So I really like this whole talk. I'm completely for it. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to go to it now because of this medical stuff. But I do believe that like we can, it's never going to go away. I'm always going to be a compulsive overeater. I'm always going to get triggered. But I know, like, if I taste something and I'm like, oh, that tastes really good. You guys know what I'm talking about, that, like, exceedingly good, that I shouldn't eat it. You know, I shouldn't get that much of a reaction out of food, right? And if I am, that means something's off.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. She said so many very important things that I even forgot about. It's like now I get to know what hunger feels like, and I also most of the time know what satiety is when I feel satisfied. Usually, unfortunately for me, it's at least a half hour after the meal Like, I still at the meal want to keep eating more, but I've learned, you know, learned all that portion control, moderate, and then so later. But you said some great, great things. Thank you so much. I just love the workshop, but what I need to add for me is the being honest and having a sponsor. Where I am in my life right now is to be going out there and doing those things and not talking to a sponsor is really scary. And I've been in OA also a long time, and I've had sponsors, and I've worked the steps, and right now in my life, that's not what's happening. Now, I'm hoping to leave with a sponsor before I go back to Idaho, but I just want to say, like when you were sharing, doing any of this that you were talking about without accountability or without a sponsor, for me, is definitely going down that rabbit hole. And it's a rabbit hole, and it's hard to get back. So thanks.
Thank you.
Yes, this guy Chris from Chicago reminded me last night that I had said something in previous years about that this is a disease of self-hate. And, you know, I'd forgotten that. But, you know, we're self-destructive individuals. An addict alone is in bad company. Left to our own devices, we make decisions harmful to self. Being alone in your own head is like being behind enemy lines. Right? So, yeah. Yeah. So actually, you know, I wrote this little AM here to say something. You know, I realized from day one I was really on a flexitarian food plan and didn't know it. Because all the ladies in the Palos Verdes Library said, here's how we eat. There's gray sheet, orange sheet, or blue sheet. Yeah. So the gray sheet was the most rigid, and I took it home. And I called the lady, and I said, I have always hated to eat breakfast. If I eat breakfast, it kicks in my engines, and I'm hungry all day long. I said, I'm a night eater. I come home from work at 10:30 at night after doing four groups a night with alcoholic families. Couldn't I have my breakfast at night when I come home? Couldn't we wait till I come home and I have my yogurt and fruit before I go to bed? Couldn't I? And she said, okay.
Wow.
Imagine. No, seriously, I'm here 41 years and my recovery has helped a lot of people other than me. Imagine if that lady would have said no. Said, okay, let's try it. And it worked. I had lunch, I had dinner, and at 10:30 at night, I had my yogurt and fruit, and I went to sleep. And I did that for the first 2 years. Rigid, weighed and measured, called in every day. Now I'm here. I have changed in the program. My life has changed, my recovery's changed. So,
one more quick question.
Sure, please.
Back to that original question.
Pardon me?
So then we are different from the alcoholic thing, right?
Oh, yeah. This afternoon we'll deal with how we're different and some more of
this.
Exactly. That's why I told you they started yelling at me, you want alcoholics to drink. No, I'm not recommending this for alcoholics.
Got it.
I'm an alcoholic. I have not drank in 36 years. I don't want to, and I don't need to. But I do have to eat, goddammit! Hello? Is there one difference we have? Hello? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Shelley, compulsive eater. The one thing that I found that someone said to me was, it's not that you can't eat it, it's that you shouldn't eat it. And that makes quite a difference to me because I get that choice. And people always say, oh, you can't have that. Oh, yeah, I can. I can have anything I want. But do I want it? That's my choice.
Right. Well, like someone said last night, the person said to them, I can eat anything I want as long as I want to pay the consequences. There's no free lunch. So, yeah. So, what we'll get into more, even more this afternoon, will be about trying to listen to that voice. Like she said, if it tastes too wonderful, and I'm already thinking about the next batch, then maybe it's time to stop. And you know, don't play dumb. You know when that, yeah, not my cup of tea. This can't work for me. We'll get into more of that after lunch. But what I want to do now is something that will give us some more training for later this afternoon. And it's about listening to that still small voice within. That wisdom, that higher power, to thine own self be true. So I want us all to do an exercise. First, just relax and try to feel the vibration. We're not going to really meditate here. I just want you to feel this vibration, and then we're going to go elsewhere. So what I want us to deal with is becoming a being that can pay attention to the resonance around us. You know, in a book I wrote once, I told a story about when I was attacked in India many years ago, and I was walking down the street with this guy, and it was kind of a wooded area, and there were bushes over here, and as we were walking, my body went, whoa! And I felt like, you know, the birds had whooshed up out of the bushes. And I looked over at him, and I knew he was going to do me harm. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he knew I knew. So he pushed me, and he grabbed my purse, and he took off running, and blah, blah, blah. I lived to tell the story. But the great thing was my body, that I was walking, and this man was intending danger for me, and my body went, whoo! Okay? So I was ready. So when he pushed me, I did not fall in the bushes. Okay? In fact, I fought with him. He broke the purse strap. Like an idiot, you fight with these people. But, you know, it's reflex. So what I was alluding to this morning is that maybe if you become more of this vibrating, spiritual, gorgeous energy person, your life will change, your food will change. It doesn't mean you're not going to be in danger from time to time, and maybe bad things will happen. Happens. So, there's an African village where when a woman is pregnant, all of the ladies in the village come and sit with her. And then a song develops. They all kind of start humming. And then all of a sudden there will be a song. And they sing that song to the woman's belly. This is that being's song. All right? So then when the birth happens, when the baby is being born, all the ladies come and sing that song for that baby. When that baby then is going through maturation into adulthood, for many it's age 13 or 14 in a lot of these villages, everyone comes and sings the song. At that time, the whole village sings the song. When they get married, everybody sings that song for the bride and the groom. And when the person dies, they sing their song. So there's only one other time in life that they sing the song. And that's when that person got in trouble. If they stole something, or they lied to somebody, or they did some mischief, of whatever degree, the whole village comes and sings them their song because they forgot who they were. They forgot their song. So they need to be reminded of who they really are. So I said something this morning very offhandedly. I said, we eat to shut up our song. That somebody inside is calling to us. And we don't want to hear it. Shut up and have a Twinkie. So I want to do something that we'll all do, those who want to, those who don't, just hold up your hand and we won't do it. But first for the morning, we'll change it in the afternoon, but for the morning, I want you to remember how you used to be called when you were younger, at whatever time. And I'll give you an example so you'll see. I'm going to do my mother calling me in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. My mother calling me to come to dinner. And this is how it sounded. Judy! Don't have judgment about any of it. It's just how it sounded. So I want you to each remember any kind of time. I mean, there, you know, I could have said, piece of shit. That was one also. But that's just the one I'm remembering right now. And I want you to go, we'll go around and you'll each call how you were called, and then we're going to echo it back for you. So I'm going to do mine again, and then you all sing it back to me. Got it? Okay. Judy!
Judy!
Beautiful. Okay. I'll come back to you if you want to remember. If you don't...
I don't think she called me. I don't hear her calling me.
Some way that you were called. No, but I did, my mother. You can do anything you want. How anybody... What your song was at some other time of your life. It doesn't have to be your mom.
Margie.
Margie. Margie.
Shelley.
Shelley.
Deborah.
Deborah.
Kettle.
Kettle.
Carito.
Carito.
Leonard!
Leonard!
Kathy?
Kathy?
Beverly.
Beverly!
Phyllis!
Phyllis!
A nickname was Air Bear.
Air Bear! My dad called me Mike. Well, do it like the song.
It was just, hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Brenda.
Brenda.
Sandy.
Sandy.
Nancy.
Nancy.
Annie.
Annie.
Nikki.
Nikki.
Beverly.
Beverly.
Ellen.
Ellen.
Yo.
Yo.
Janet Lori.
Janet Lori.
Debbie Shett.
Debbie Shett.
Shell.
Shell.
Sheena.
Sheena.
Claudia.
Claudia.
Teresa Ann.
Teresa Ann.
Holly.
Holly.
Judith.
Judith.
Linny.
Linny.
Stephen Robert.
Stephen Robert.
Nickname. Flubby.
Flubby.
Kay.
Kay. Okay. So.
I think she's ready.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Diane.
All right, everybody's done it. Okay, so, you know, I just, we need to stay with people who know our song. Now, in recovery, we get to transcend our upbringing and transcend our past. It's a whole new ballgame. We get to create our family, our support system, our future. That's what adulthood is all about. Remember I said, don't play dumb. It's time. For some of us, like myself, we may be avoiding certain decisions we need to make. So we want to stay childlike, childish. But there's a deeper song brewing, and we're going to go to that song this afternoon. The new song. Okay? That one served you, but it wasn't your own creation. So as we proceed the rest of the day, I want you to think about that song and how you want to create it. Again, the workshop is about individualizing your recovery. So make it yours. That's what will keep you here. That's what will make you succeed, by making it yours, not by blindly following whatever the hell you hear. Use it. Use all the great information we have to give here. But I want us all to be individuals, because that's what keeps you interesting and exciting for me to keep coming back. If we're all in a cult saying the same thing like everybody is, it's right? So, if you can, we're going to go to lunch pretty soon here now. And if you can, I'd like you to try to stay as quiet as possible during your meal. Think about the idea of wanting to listen to yourself and your body. Enjoy the periphery. Listen to all kinds of other people, but not to be engaging in chatter. So if you know anything about meditation or mindfulness, to kind of calm down your body before you eat, get quiet, and think about this fabulous being that you are, and that you're going to cross your own boundary and take a foreign substance, use your own juices to build new parts of you. He talks about intimacy, connection. There's nothing more intimate than eating. Nothing. No other activity builds new cells. So why do it unconsciously? Why not do it for fun and for free? What I'm going to get into this afternoon is in the big book where it says that every alcoholic wants to control and enjoy his drinking, like that's a downside. I say for overeaters, our recovery is that we control and enjoy our eating. So we're not here to be monks or saints. I want you to savor and suck dry this meal you're going to have as this new person singing a new song. Just think, you know, think along those lines. Now, if you're at a chatty table and the others want you to talk, then just chew your food to liquid. And when you feel, then open your mouth and talk. Just no talking and spitting. I was raised talking and spitting. So one technique I like to try, just for my own training when I can, is to put down my fork between bites. Ah! Right? Ah!
No way.
But just as an exercise, so we'll come back and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the differences when AA recovery, and we'll talk about your new voice.